Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Manitoga, the Russell Wright Design Center in Garrison, New York, is the house, studio, and woodland garden of mid-century designer Russell Wright. It's a National Historic Landmark, an affiliate site of the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and a World Monuments Watch site. Manitoga's artist residency program was initiated in 2014 to foster creative responses to Manitoga that invoke Russell Wright's legacy of creative experimentation and celebration of place. This year's residency artist, Peter Bynum, is known for his light-infused sculptural paintings and large-scale installations. He creates his work by pressing paint between sheets of glass, allowing it to spread, span, and split according to its own plan. He then layers these branched paintings over each other and illuminates them from behind. The effect is singular. Bynum's work has been exhibited all over the world. His residency exhibition, Ecstatic Light, presents a site-specific installation of several pieces in Russell Wright's house and studio, marking Manitoga's first presentation of a contemporary artist within the interiors of the property. I spoke with Peter Bynum last week at Manitoga. Peter, thank you so much for spending time with me today.
So nice to be here. Thank you.
So tell us how this residency, this exhibition at Manitoga, came about.
It really started with an exhibition I had at the Museum of Arts and Design in New York with James Turrell. The curator for the New York Public Library saw that exhibition. It was a large illuminated triptych and thought that the work would really be perfect for the New York Public Library's windows on Fifth Avenue. So they asked me to do 17 large illuminated paintings for the New York Public Library's Fifth Avenue windows that would be illuminated 24/7 for 9 months. So that was great. There was 50,000 people a day going by those. They then asked me to do a public lecture. So they had Bryce Marden, Richard Serra, Chuck Close, and then they asked me to do one, and I did a lecture and kind of a big screen video presentation, which Allison Cross, the executive director of Manitoga, came to. I guess she liked what she saw and heard, because she called up a few days later and said, would you like to be the artist in residence at Manitoga for 2016? She said, we've never had an artist actually install art in the home and studio of Russell Wright. So I hesitated for about 5 seconds and said yes.
Tell us about how you, going back further than that, how you developed the process by which you create these pieces when you discovered what you were going to do with paint.
Well, I spent several years experimenting with paint and found paint has a kind of secret life that when it's put under pressure, it creates thousands of branches in a perfect ecosystem. You find these kinds of branching all throughout nature. You find it in the plant world with tree limbs and branches and root systems and coral. You find it in the animal world and in our own bodies, in our cardiovascular system, our respiratory system, the neural network we're processing all these thoughts with right now. All are made up of dendrites, these branches that are really systems for distributing energy. And I was kind of stunned by this ability paint has, this innate organic intelligence it has to replicate ecosystems throughout nature. Because nature's, you know, perfected this kind of system over a half billion years, and paint does it almost instantaneously. So I thought that was interesting, and I wanted to illuminate these branches, and sometimes there are hundreds, thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of branches just in a single painting. So I wanted to bring light through those branches. So I started painting on glass, and I started working with an optical scientist to develop a flat lighting panel that could go behind the painting and bring light through the paint, could saturate the paint, could suffuse the paint with light. So one thing led to another, and I pushed that process along over the last few years, and here we are.
The piece that's in the room with us now is green. The first thing I think of is like ferns. It looks kind of like a field of ferns, but more abstract than that, not specifically like a field of ferns. After finding that paint reacts like so many things grow in nature, do you often work in colors found in the natural world, or does your palette vary widely?
You know, both. Here at Manitoga, I felt compelled to use more organic colors, like found in nature, but a lot of my work is very psychedelic. As a matter of fact, I'm having an exhibit in Chelsea coming up in a few weeks at Dan Cossen Contemporary called Psychedelic. Mm-hmm. So it can vary from being very earthy and organic to very wild and like an acid trip.
How do you come into Russell Wright's home and figure out what you will do for this residency, for this exhibition?
Well, you know, I really sat with it for a long time. Russell Wright sat here for a long time when he was thinking about building this extraordinary place. You know, it's 80 acres, a home, a studio, and he talks about sitting here at night and just looking at the moon, looking how the light would move, how it would affect things. So I walked around a lot, really tried to feel the vibe and feel what would make sense, what would be an homage to Wright and very respectful of this place, but also thought about what I could add to it, what I could bring to it.
Do you have to be very careful and considerate of the historical value of the space we're in?
I'm sure Buckingham Palace is easier to install work in. Russell Wright did so many crazy things here. A lot of it's very delicate. There are walls embedded with pine needles. There are experimental materials of all kinds. You can't put a nail in a wall. You can't put a screw in a wall. You can't really touch anything. So given that my paintings often weigh several hundred pounds because they're made up of multiple sheets of tempered glass on metal frames, it's been a challenge.
How many pieces are part of this exhibition?
There'll be 12 paintings ranging in size from 2 feet by 2 feet up to 4 feet by 8 feet. Some of those paintings are made up of multiple panels of glass. When I did the library, we had about 3 or 4 tons of glass, actually, that we used in that exhibition. Here, because of the restrictions and not being able to really go into the walls, they'll be somewhat lighter. 12 paintings, two in the studio from the early, very experimental days. Some that I have made just in the last few weeks, and I'll be painting right up to the last minute and then seeing what comes out, seeing what works best. We'll be installing 10 in the house. So it'll be kind of a narrative arc. You'll come along this amazing woodland path lined with mountain laurels that are in bloom, around a quarry with a 40-foot waterfall, and over a bridge into the studio we're sitting in now. Mm-hmm. And there'll be two small paintings in here. Then you'll go into the house, and there'll be 3 paintings in there, a couple of them quite large, through a hallway, darkened hallway, with 3 more that you'll be really squeezed right up against. And then you'll come into what we're calling the immersion room, where there'll be 4 very large paintings, and it'll be almost wall-to-wall light and glass and color. And hopefully it'll be an ecstatic experience.
You mentioned working with someone to develop the lights that you use to illuminate the paint and the glass. Since your work is so heavy, do you have a team of people that you work with to install? And if you do, how do you choose these people? And what do they have to do with you to make sure that your vision is what the team is accomplishing?
I have an extraordinary team of assistants that have been with me for 6 or 7 years. They know every aspect of the art. They've installed in galleries and museums all over the country, all over the world. I'm really blessed to have them with me. So all I really have to focus on is making good art. And then I hand it over to Pablo and Edison and Hector, and they take it from there.
You apply pressure to the paint and it does what it will do. Does it ever do something you don't like? Do you get rid of stuff that you create?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. You know, Russell Wright talked a lot about all his failures. Most of my work is a failure, and that's a great thing about painting on glass, because you just don't care. The great thing about glass is that you just take a razor blade and some Windex and you clean it and you start all over again. So you can take a lot of chances, take risks, fail big, and you don't care because it's different from canvas or even what I had been painting on, which is plexiglass. You can't clean plexiglass. You just have to throw it away. I've got a huge pile of failures in the studio just waiting to be cleaned, and hopefully the failures, you know, hopefully the eventually you make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
Your studio is very near here. In fact, we're going there in a few minutes. Were you familiar, or how familiar were you with Manitoga and Russell Wright before you were approached for this residency?
I've been here several times. It's just an utterly charming, beautiful place that Russell Wright worked so hard to really turn into almost a Garden of Eden. You know, when he bought it in the early 50s, it had been quarried, it had been logged, you know, it was a disaster. Mm-hmm. And he worked to restore it to its pristine condition. But more than that, he started out early in life as a theater set designer. And what you have at Manitoga is essentially an 80-acre set design that he staged for the public benefit. So even though he was a huge force in design in the 20th century, really one of the giants, one of the greats of modern design, really a precursor of Martha Stewart and Ralph Lauren, people like that, but with much more depth, I think. But the products he designed, the furniture and the housewares and the like, sold hundreds of millions of pieces. But he built Manitoga to be his real legacy. And he built it not as a prototype, but as a really exaggerated version of the kind of individualizing people could do with their house. So you have giant cypress trees growing up through the living room. You have a fireplace that looks like giants just dropped a pile of boulders. You have boulders for steps. You have rocks embedded in walls. You have pine needles embedded in plaster. He really kind of went all out to show just how much we could live in harmony with nature. He was very worried about the effects of industrialization and urbanization on people's peace of mind and ability to have kind of reach a higher state of consciousness that he felt could really only be achieved in nature. So I've been here several times before they have amazing concerts here where musicians are scattered all over the property playing original compositions, dance performances on structures floating in the pond in the quarry with that 40-foot waterfall right beside them. It's an extraordinary place. So I have been here several times before, admired it, and just see it as one of the great historic landmarks. It's a designated historic landmark, but one of the historic landmarks, not just in terms of the architecture, but also in terms of being kind of a temple of modern design.
Shall we go to your studio?
Sure, sounds good. Let's go.
We're speaking with 2016 Manitoga residency artist Peter Bynum. At this point, we got into the car with Dan Rigney, external affairs manager at Manitoga, and took Route 202 to Peter's studio in Peekskill, stopping on the way to look at his recent Hudson Valley Center for Contemporary Art commission, Life, which reinterprets his work into 10 massive canvases for the Hudson Riverfront in Peekskill, New York. Then, onto the studio. We're in your studio in Peekskill. How did you find this place? How important is location to you in creating your art?
I looked all over the Hudson Valley for a good studio. And when I found this place, I knew it was it. It's 30 feet by 100 feet. It's got a 100-foot long bank of windows. Has an oversized garage door. So when we do big exhibitions where we have to crate the work and ship it to Europe or Asia or across the U.S., the tractor trailer just backs up to this giant garage door and the power lift comes down and the crates go right up. Very few spaces like this. And the fact that it's right on the river is fantastic because you have the river, you have the mountains, you're constantly reminded of the Hudson River School of Painting, you know, really the first indigenous American school of painting. So I love it.
I think it's very interesting that you relate to that school of art that was formed here because you're using some of the same material, but the result couldn't be more different.
That's right. The result is very different, but the philosophy, I suppose you could say, is the same. The Hudson River School was really concerned with the effects of industrialization on the American soul, the American psyche. And there was such a reverence for nature that when they painted the landscapes, they didn't even want to leave any brushstrokes. They wanted it to be almost like a photograph because they considered nature to be already perfect. And this work, of course, is deeply rooted in nature and in the perfection of nature. The branching architecture in these paintings is a system that nature has perfected. So I think there are a lot of similarities in that sense. Do they look the same? No. But with Russell Wright, with my paintings, with the Hudson River School of Painting, there's a through line where there's a sense of nature being so much more intelligent than humankind. And that's one thing that really drove me forward when I discovered that paint has this incredible branching architecture, that it does all by itself. I thought of the whole history of painting from the first cave paintings that we know of, at least in France and Spain, from 40,000 years ago, all the way through the entire history of art up to today. It's been about the human autobiography, the human narrative. Artists making paintings about ideas, feelings, ways of seeing. And I thought, humanity is just a slice of life on the planet. And so nature has perfected this over all these eons. And I wanted to pursue that rather than what was in my poor little mind or my little feelings. I think the Hudson River School felt the same way about that. And I think Russell Wright felt the same way. You know, all Russell Wright's designs are very nature-based. And his biggest goal in life was for people to have a deep and intimate experience of nature. And that's why he built Manitoga.
You mentioned when you have to ship things, you have to create them and ship them across the country, across the world. Have you ever had a bad result at the end of shipping? Have you lost a piece in transit?
You know, it's amazing, never.
Good. I got very stressed out as I asked you that.
The crates are custom made. There's all this high-tech padding. So they ship to Shanghai, they ship to Paris, they've shipped to Rome, they've shipped to California, all over the place, and never a problem. You know, tempered glass is amazing. You can hit it in the middle of the baseball bat and it won't break. So it's not really something we worry about.
Great. When you show your work internationally, is the reaction you get, the feedback, similar or different to a reaction in the United States?
It's such an interesting question, because what I think is in some ways unique about this work is when we look at it, we just get it. You don't need language, you don't need thought, you don't need interpretation. You immediately recognize that all living organisms share. You know, it's a universal principle of life, right? It's something that unifies us and helps us feel connected, I think, to all life on the planet. So I feel like regardless of your economic status, what country you live in, your ethnicity, 100 years ago, now, 100 years from now, when people look at this, we all see more or less the same thing, which is the life force in action.
In the studio, there are a number of pieces that I got to walk around and look at before we started taping. Are all of these done?
Some are done, some are not. The amazing thing about glass, and particularly making paintings using multiple layers of glass, is that you can rearrange and rearrange and rearrange. And sometimes I'll make a painting on a layer of glass and it'll look terrible and I'll lean it against the wall. Then I'll make another painting on a layer of glass and lean it against the wall. And then at some point, sometimes I'll go, what if that one went behind that one? And what if I flipped it around or turned it upside down and those patterns merged? What would that do? And a lot of the time, I'm just blown away by these, I'm not going to call them masterpieces by any stretch of the imagination, but accidental successes that happen where things that wouldn't work do work. And if you do the math, it's kind of incredible. If you take, a lot of these paintings have 3, 4, 5 sheets of glass. And if you take 4 square sheets of glass, you actually can make over 1,000 different possible paintings by turning them upside down, flipping them around, changing the order, etc. So it's kind of extraordinary. Yeah. I know something's finished when it takes my breath away, done. But much of the time something will have potential and it'll just sit there and lean against the wall. And then I'll do something else and I go, well, it has potential. Lean it against the wall, but then they'll cross-fertilize, they'll come together, and I'll look at it and go, wow, that's a painting.
And that moment is definite. You stop flipping around and turning over at that point.
I see it right away. When it's fully resolved, you just know it. You get it. You know, that's the kind of ecstatic moment that I'm looking for. You know, the exhibition at Manitoga is called Ecstatic Light, mm-hmm. and we usually associate ecstasy with sex and mystical religious experience, psychotropic drugs. But what I really think it is when you feel an intense sense of connection. And what I hope that people will experience is they'll walk into Manitoga and they'll see these illuminated paintings on glass, just, you know, vibrating, throbbing with life. And I'm shooting for them to have an ecstatic experience.
The palettes, the color palettes for each are different, some related to each other maybe, but we talked back at Manitoga about natural occurring colors. Some of the ones there were, you know, primarily green or greens and browns. And then some are done in shades. Like one of my favorite ones here is sort of whites and grays and like a very light kind of tan. When you start, do you have a mission for this one will be bright, this one will be more neutral in palette?
Sometimes you start with an idea in mind and you have a vision of what the finished painting will look like. Sometimes you just start, you know, and you just go. And sometimes when I paint, it's almost in a trance-like state and you don't know what's going to come. And another aspect of it is that you don't know what the paint's going to do. You know, so you really have to let go of control when you make these. And I like that. I like trying to dissolve the artistic ego, you know, because it's really, with these paintings, and one of the things that I think is a departure from the history of painting is that I'm really more of a lab technician in some ways than an artist. I'm really there to serve the paint, to allow the paint to have a life of its own. Jackson Pollock talked about that, about paint having a life of its own. So I want to just release its primal energy, allow it to behave like a living organism, which is what it does when it's put under pressure. That's how we get these incredible branches, these hundreds, these thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of branches in a single painting. That is paint expressing a universal principle all on its own. I'm the facilitator, but it's really paint doing this.
Peter Bynum is the 2016 residency artist at Manitoga, the Russell Wright Design Center in Garrison, New York. A member opening celebration for his exhibition Ecstatic Light is being held on Saturday, May 21st. The tour season at Manitoga opens on Friday, May 13th. More information is available on the Manitoga website, visit manitoga.org. That link is posted along with a link to Peter's site and this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.